This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. We're discussing a bold initiative by Gary Gensler, the new chair of the SEC, formerly a chair of the SEC during the Obama administration. He's returned to his post to present to all companies, private market companies, a requirement to disclose what their investments mean for the future of the Earth's climate. And the second question that Richard raises in his most recent essay, Defining Ideas, is can this proposed initiative, in other words, disclosure, can it lead to curbing what you presume right now are negative effects of global warming? How would they demonstrate that, Richard?
Well, I mean, look, when you're starting to do this, it's pretty clear that you know what to do when you have relatively closed systems. So, for example, suppose you have a bunch of seashells and they're at the edge of a river, but they have to have a salty environment in order to survive. If it turns out that you pour out too much pure water, it may not be a pollutant in the ordinary sense, but what it's going to do is to dilute the salt so the organisms will die. And so therefore, you have a relatively clear recipe of what it is that you have to do when it comes to controlling those kinds of flows. But when you're dealing with global warming, you're dealing with what is called a complex chaotic system, which doesn't mean that it's just random events. It means that these events are fully determined by the usual principles of causal science, but you don't know the initial conditions well enough to do it. And the key thing about the environmental prediction stuff is very small changes in the initial positions can result in vastly different changes in the consequence. So we're talking about things which are extremely crude. You know, we're lucky to get this stuff within an order of magnitude. When you're trying to do the predictive side of this, if you change something by a half a degree, it could result in huge changes down the road, and you won't know which the direction is going to be. So you have to be extremely humble when it comes to the fact that you can kind of take this stuff and put it. So take something like a pipeline, right? Perfectly simple situation, just a tube. Well, it's not just a tube. You put a new pipeline in, what's going to happen? Well, first of all, you may be taking out old pipelines, and you also may be taking out trucks and train cars, which transmit natural gas and crude oil. And the pipeline is surely infinitely safer when it comes to their transmission. So the amount of emissions that's going to come from the pipeline proper is, in fact, right, going to be lower. But if you have to take into account the stuff of your customers, when this thing gets to a refinery, are you now supposed to take into account what the crude oil that you shifted is going to do in terms of the increased emissions, if any, from that refinery? Well, you then have to know what the technology is for the way in which that refinery is going to work. You're going to have to know the mix of products that it makes with petroleum, because there's a huge list of these things, from petroleum jelly like Vaseline on the one hand to various kinds of jet fuels on the other. You're then going to have to know something about their control and waste programs. And this is extremely difficult. So the correct answer is not to ask the pipeline company to figure out what the refinery is going to do. You look at the refinery and see what it does and control it. Now, remember, carbon dioxide is only one so-called pollutant. There are other things which are perfectly demonstrable pollutants, sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxide, methane gas, and so forth. And those are coming out in some kind of proportions. So you're going to have to figure out what's going on. They change the way in which they do their production, and the mix of the pollutants are going to go out. They put in another set of filters, and it turns out the total level of emissions are going to go down. The plant starts to depreciate. Something's going to start to go up. It's not possible. So if you want to control what's going on, tell the kind company, you shift the oil. And if it turns out that there's too much pollutants of one kind or another at the downstream plant, they will then require less oil. You will shift left oil. And if it turns out that you can't get enough oil because the externalities are great, you may have to shut down. But if it also turns out the externalities aren't that great, you may expand production.
The third question you ask is, presuming the suggested initiative curbs the effect of global warming in some fashion, how do you demonstrate that the institutional investor is part of this success or failure? And let me give the example you provide. How do you demonstrate that the wide variety of outcomes of disaster, U.S. natural catastrophe property losses proceed from one particular kind of investment? The range here is vast between 2012 and 2021. It's almost, it appears to be random or some kind of witticism in heaven.
Yeah, look, I gave this kind of table in sort of constant dollars, because what it does is it says we do have natural catastrophes. And what the report did is it said, you know, last year we had 20 natural catastrophes of $1 billion or more. So say it's $30 billion. If you're talking about a $30 trillion economy, this is, you know, child's play. It doesn't matter at all. But let's suppose that it does matter. And then you start looking at the numbers in dollars. In 2012, it's $75 billion. And in 2013, it's $28 billion. And then it turns out now it's $92 billion. But 2 years ago, it was $41 billion. What is very clear is that this high level of fluctuation cannot be exchanged by the incremental changes in carbon dioxide level. Not even clear that it could be changed by climate change, because water vapor is an extremely powerful greenhouse gas, and that varies all over the place, which makes predictions extremely difficult. But some of these things come from volcanoes of one kind or another. Some of them come from a shipwreck that takes place on the high seas. So if you really wanted to do this correctly, and I don't, all right, but this is what you'd have to do. Take 2017. That's a year we have $145 billion worth of current losses, which is six times what it was a couple of years before. What you have to do is to go in and take each of the events and find out its cause. And then once you found out its cause, you would have to ask, to what extent is that related to global changes in temperature? John, let's be very clear about this. The people who are predicting disaster today are not predicting masses based upon the recorded numbers that we've had over the last 40 years. Because the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Aeronautical Association, what they do is they say last year was the sixth warmest year in global warming. Well, that means that it's cooling down from five previous years. If you look at the total swing over a 40-year period, it's probably a couple of tenths of degrees at most. So what they're doing is they're betting on the cup that there's something about global warming that's going to be latent today and it's going to be manifest tomorrow. But if you look at these catastrophe figures, it turns out it has nothing whatsoever to do with carbon dioxide. That we can say with 100% confidence. What we can say is what it has to do with, and what we, until we start to look at what these things are. If you then look at it and you see this is a completely diffuse set of causation, random, they're not repetitive, different parts of the world, different places, different regions or whatever, then what you say is, maybe we tackle those problems if we could figure out a pattern with some of them rather than doing this. And so I am somebody who believes that trying to figure out today what the world is going to look like in 50 years is a mistake. The one point I'd like to make is what you have to do is to think about long-term trends in production. And virtually every single commodity of which I am aware, every single activity, there are two things that are going on a regular and persistent basis. One is that safety levels have improved enormously. Basically, if you compare now to 25 years ago or 30 years ago, all of these risks, whether you're talking malpractice or pipeline leakages or whatever it is, they're all down. And that sort of indicates technology is going to do it. Then there's something else known as dematerialization, championed by a man named Jesse Ausubel. Now, what he does is he says, how many inputs does it take to make? And then you fill in the blank, a bushel of wheat, right? A pound of steel and so forth. And it's the same pattern. The efficiencies in technology is so great that what happens is the raw stuff that you need to produce this constantly goes down. If that's the particular case, then the amount of emissions with carbon dioxide is likely to go down from human activity wholly without regard to any of these other kinds of situations. So what you have to then ask yourself is, do we do better by trying to get a good patent system in place, a sensible system of industrial contract, or by trying to have these disclosure reports? And my view is that the proven situation is that technology is the only fix that works. All this disclosure stuff is worthless.
Professor Richard Epstein, the Hoover Institution, commenting on the proposal, the initiative now out for public comment by the SEC, led by Gary Gensler, to make climate change part of the disclosure process for investment in American and market companies. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.